This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. The relationship between doctors and their patients has some built-in tensions. Until recently, many doctors were used to dictating a course of action to their patients, giving brief, even brusque answers to their questions. But the relationship between physicians and patients has started to change. Many doctors have started to work in partnership with their patients, sharing detailed information and working together to decide a course of treatment. And now the internet is adding a new dimension to this complicated relationship. Many Americans turn to the web before and sometimes instead of seeing a physician. If they do consult a doctor, they may walk into the office with a pile of papers and a wealth of information about their ailments. But is that a help or a hindrance to good doctor-patient relations? And what happens if that online information is incomplete or untrue? Later this hour, we're going to be talking about the history of pirates, female style. But first, we're going to talk about how the internet is changing the dynamic between doctors and patients. Join the conversation. Are you a patient who has sought out health information online? Did it help? Are you a doctor who's seeing more patients who treat the internet as a health resource? And how do you feel about that? Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. The email address, totn@npr.org. With us now is Susanna Fox. She's the Director of Research for the Pew Internet and American Life Project. She joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks for being with us, Susanna.
Thank you.
And, of course, Pew has been studying this phenomenon of people seeking out medical information on the internet. First of all, give us a sense of how widespread the practice is.
Well, it turns out that looking for health information is one of the more popular activities online. When we talk to people about all sorts of activities, we ask about, first, do you go online, and then do you use email, do you research product information, etc. And it turns out that health information is right up there with product information. People are really looking for ways to make better decisions in their lives, and they use the internet to do that.
Are they using the internet instead of going to doctors, or in conjunction with going visiting the doctor's office?
Our most recent study shows that if someone has visited a doctor in the last year, they're more likely to have gone online for health information. And if they have not visited a doctor, they're less likely to have gone online for information. This suggests that people are sort of in the middle of a network, that if they have a health issue, they turn to traditional medicine and they turn to a doctor, and they go online to get more in-depth research done.
And how what effect are you seeing this is having on the patient-doctor relationship? You're smiling.
Well, there's really two changes that we see. Some doctors are very receptive. They like being kept up to date on cutting-edge articles. They don't have time to read everything that's going on in medical literature. And patients who, obviously, for many, it's a life and death situation, have all the time in the world to keep up to date on the research. There's other doctors who don't want to hear about what's going online. They are very nervous about the quality of information online, and in many cases, rightly so. Some of the information is incomplete and hard to understand. So we really have heard from two different kinds of patients, patients who feel like their doctor is a partner in their care versus patients who feel like they need to go underground with their internet health research.
And what kind of information would you say people are looking for when they go online? What's the main reason that people go on?
A lot of people report that they go online before a doctor's appointment to prepare for it. They also go online after the doctor's appointment because the average appointment is about 10 minutes long, and that's not enough time to make sure that they really understand all the terminology and the treatment options that they might have before them.
All right, we have an email here I'm going to read, and I'd like you to just tell us how typical this is. This is from Sarah, and she's in Buffalo, New York. As a sufferer of acid reflux, my doctor has given me medication and a list of foods to avoid. Still having problems, I went online. I found lists miles long of foods to avoid. The next visit to my doctor, I asked him about all these other foods, and he agreed they might upset my stomach, but he wasn't sure. I was disappointed he didn't know. Next time I'm wondering about a certain food's reaction, I won't call my doctor. I'll just log on. How typical is that?
That's actually really typical. We conducted an online survey in which we gathered that kind of anecdotal evidence and found that in terms of practical day-to-day help, like a food list, that the internet was actually much better than a doctor. A doctor doesn't necessarily have time to go over every kind of possibility, but the internet has time, and you have time sitting at home doing the research by yourself.
Something I wondered as I was reading the study, I was thinking, well, I've gone online, but I never actually thought of myself. I think you call them medical seekers. I've never actually thought of myself that way, although, and so I was wondering, do you differentiate between the occasional or perhaps even one-time user and those who really maybe are addicted to it or quite invested in going online for medical advice?
That's one of the most important distinctions to make, that 8 out of 10 internet users don't have a major medical issue in a given year, or even a couple of years. But there are a group of internet users who are dealing with a chronic condition, or importantly, has a loved one who's dealing with a chronic condition, and they are much more enthusiastic about using internet health resources. They're more likely to go online every day, once a week, whereas the average internet user goes online every few months or less.
And for those people who have an illness or are a caretaker, another aspect of this is support groups online.
Absolutely, especially for someone who's dealing with a known but rare illness. They're able to connect to other people. There might not be anybody else in their community who's dealing with this condition, but they can find and connect with people who are also dealing with it and get practical tips and emotional support.
We are discussing the phenomenon of getting your medical information from the internet. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 800-989-8255. And now we're going to go to Tom, who is in Gillette, Wyoming. Hi, Tom.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling. Go right ahead.
We had a my roommate had a granddaughter a year ago today, as a matter of fact. Today's her first birthday. So you know how the rest of the story turns out. She was born with gastroschisis, and I had taught physiology years ago, and this was a new one on me, but the bowel is on the outside of the body. At any rate, she had to be delivered in Denver, and of course we're in Wyoming. And doctors are wonderful people, God love them, but they don't have a lot of time to answer a lot of worried questions. So we were able to go online, find out that the prognosis really was good, even though it sounds terrible. And she was able to come home about the middle of December, and of course she was born the 14th of July. But I guess the main point is that we were able to get a great deal of peace of mind without taking up valuable time from a healthcare professional by going online, and even found support groups, as you've already mentioned, mm-hmm. and just a wealth of information. So there's an awful lot out there, but I would hasten to add that I don't think that we should be involved in self-diagnosis or self-prescribing simply because there's an awful lot of things that a well-trained healthcare provider knows that we couldn't possibly know. Even it wouldn't matter how many pages on the internet we read.
Yeah, thanks so much for raising that really important point, Tom, and thanks for recounting your experience. Susanna, what needs are best met by the internet and which are best left to the doctors?
Tom is absolutely right that a doctor should be the one who diagnoses a problem and starts the treatment. But it cannot be the case that the doctor can educate the family and reassure the family the way online information can do that, especially a situation where you're traveling between Wyoming and Denver. You probably left behind a whole network of people who wanted to know what was happening in Denver. And, the email is wonderful for keeping in touch with family and friends who are all across the country who really want to know how she's doing.
How widespread is email in the doctor-patient relationship at this point? Do people use email a lot to consult with their doctor?
It's pretty rare. It's really the most experienced internet users who are using email to keep in touch with the doctor. We, in our survey, found that it was only about 7% of internet users who had corresponded with a doctor online. Now, I should say that when we asked them, was it useful, almost all of them, 90%, said it's useful. And there's lots of health seekers, e-patients, who say they would love to exchange email. But doctors are rightly concerned about privacy. They're concerned that it's going to take up too much time. But there's actually been studies.
And what about malpractice? Is
that exactly. It? Giving out medical advice over email, is really frowned upon. But email is great for routine progress reports, keeping up to date on a treatment, checking in, maybe scheduling an appointment.
Okay. Let's go to Jane. She is in Story, Wyoming. Hi, Jane.
Hello. I just had a comment about the quality of online sources. I think it's important to patients who use the net, and I certainly have for years. I don't know how I could do without it. To note that there are better sources than others. Medline, for example, out of NIH is very good. Whereas pharmaceutical companies, you might learn something from, but you certainly wouldn't want to follow implicit ad advice when they come on.
Yeah, and I think that the study that Susanna was involved in indicates that most people are most turned off by a website that is too commercial.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
That's good to hear. Also, I think that because medical knowledge increases so rapidly, there are some areas where information doubles every 5 years. Doctors are only human.
Right.
And can't get it all. So I think they work very well together. In my case, I am one of the people who go in with papers to the doctor, but I wouldn't see a doctor who wouldn't take that seriously.
You believe it's a partnership?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for your call, mm-hmm. Jane. And Susanna, I want you to address the points. Jane has already made some of the points, but part of your study looks at what's the best way to get information and how do you determine if it's good or bad. So can you just get into that with us a little bit and give some advice to our listeners?
Absolutely. And the caller brings up a great point, which is source matters. And something like Medline Plus or the resources available on federal government websites and other hospital websites are wonderful. But what really happens is that it's the middle of the night or somebody's newly diagnosed and they just go to a search engine and they type in a couple of keywords. That's what most internet users are doing because health is really a sometime thing, not an always thing for most people. And so they're really relying on their own wits and the algorithms of search engines to find good health information. For the most part, people say that they're finding good information. But when we question them on how they decide what's good information, only 1 in 4 actually check the date and the source of the information.
And date is very important.
Date is extremely important, as we've seen in hormone replacement therapy recently. Research that came out a year ago is already dated. You don't want to pay attention to that. You want to pay attention to the latest material. Yeah. People say that they can really separate the good stuff from the bad, but when you ask about research protocol, internet users aren't necessarily following what experts would really like them to do.
Yeah. And just one other email here. Robert says, I have no choice but to research any ailment I may have because my health insurance does not allow visits to my doctor above once per year physical unless I want to pay full freight. Don't blame the internet or the doctors. Blame the health plans. Susanna?
Well, I don't know whether that's an indictment, who that is an indictment of, except the health plans, because he as a consumer is just trying to do the best he can for himself and probably for his family. But what, again, we do find is that people aren't just shutting down. If they have a choice, they're visiting both their doctor and their websites.
Thanks so much for being with us, Susanna. Susanna Fox is a director of research at the Pew Internet and American Life Project. She joined us here in Studio 3A. We're talking about how the internet affects the doctor-patient relationship. We'll be taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. Send us an email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation, NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about how the Internet is changing doctor-patient relationships. Now joining our conversation is Dr. Mehmet Oz. He's vice chair of the surgery department at New York Presbyterian Hospital and a host of the show Second Opinion on the Discovery Channel. Dr. Oz joins us by phone from his office in New York. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Oz.
Great to be here, Lynn.
We'd like our listeners to join the discussion. What do online health sites have to do to gain your trust? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK, the email address, totn@npr.org. First of all, Dr. Oz, how have online health information sources affected your relationships with your patients?
I think the relationship has been a very empowering one. In general, patients come to the office with some preconceived notions of what's going on, but frequently they're a little bit off target, and the ability to go to the Internet has allowed patients to come in, first of all, knowing the right terminology, which saves a lot of headaches for the physician. And as was discussed earlier, time is the critical element here. So the less time that's spent on simple concepts, the better. You can focus more on the patient-specific challenges. It also changes the mindset of the patient. They come in knowledgeable and wanting more. They're not scared of the process, and that's a big benefit when you go into your doctor's office.
But do you have some colleagues who don't like this, who maybe are threatened or just find it irritating when patients come in with a lot of information they found on the web, and maybe they feel that the information isn't all correct, and they've got to go through it and sort it all out?
Well, of course. Each doctor's a human like we all are, and we are representatives of our own culture. And so if you're trying to get through your patient load for the day, and an individual comes in with a 4-inch stack of papers from the Internet that you're forced to weed through, that it can be frustrating. But at the same time, physicians are also faced with the challenge of re-educating somebody, a patient who's perhaps come in with misperceptions about a particular problem. My specialty, for example, is heart disease. So if someone needs a heart transplant and they come in and are fixated on having a minimally invasive approach, the first thing I have to do is change that mindset away from a cosmetic operation and towards a life and death approach to a disease. But those are actually, I think, healthy interactions for a physician to have with the patient. The challenge that I think irritates doctors the most is when individuals come in with tidbits of information from a scattered source of Internet sites, which don't really yield a lot of valuable, actionable data.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the patient's got a complex series of ailments that aren't that clear to the healthcare provider, and by picking at a bunch of little data points, it actually makes it that much more confusing. But the big challenge, if I can just complete, mm-hmm. is that doctors sometimes, you know, we spend our whole lives working as hard as we can to get through medical school and to become good doctors, and then a patient comes in with a very different set of beliefs about their illness, and sometimes they're right. And that's scary, and it would be for anybody who's in this.
Well, that's interesting. Can you think of an example where you could explain that to me?
A great example is the use of alternative medicine for some of these ailments. Patients will sometimes come in with a constellation of symptoms, and one or two will make a lot of sense to the Western mind. You know, I'm having chest pain, and that gets it's associated with shortness of breath. So I think, well, you're having a heart attack. But maybe in addition, your nose is cold, and your feet are warm. Well, that's irrelevant to me at this point. I'm focused on your heart. But maybe those are critical clues. Maybe they hint to me that there's some malalignment of your chakras, or there's some, you know, some toxin that's influencing you. Something that I might not think of.
Mm-hmm.
It might be actually causing the heart attack that I'm diagnosing. And that opens up a whole vista of opportunities for treatment and therapy, which is why I think this interaction, frustrating as it may be, is so helpful.
Yeah. We're talking about how the Internet affects the doctor-patient relationship. Give us a call, 1-800-989-8255. We're going to go to Paul in Norfolk, Virginia. Hi, Paul. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I'm a Navy healthcare provider, and I use the Internet daily with my patients. We sit in my office in the 2 or 3 minutes that I have allotted for actual patient education, and we'll go through some sites, and I'll show them there's some really good patient teaching sites there's that are open to everyone. You don't need to have any kind of specialty or credentials to access them. And we'll go through and I'll show them that this is a good place for information, et cetera. Another thing that we talk about is the difference between a .com and a .edu and a .org type sites and things to stay away from. And I just use it all the time. And then earlier, talking about lists, well, a good example of that is what drugs are safe in lactation and pregnancy. I have a book and I can look it up, but I can also show the patient how to look it up. And you have to be careful. I mean, I'm all for empowering patients, but it's good to educate them and show them that this is what this means and that's what that means. And frankly, I can't memorize them all. So we'll look at it together and I'll say, that is okay, but here's one that's not, so maybe you should stop taking this over-the-counter thing or something like that. And it just is a wonderful, wonderful tool as long as it's managed safely, just like anything else. And I don't know what I'd do without it right now. Well, actually, I'd adapt, but I really like it.
Well, thanks so much for calling, Paul.
Okay.
Dr. Oz, just a follow-up, what advice do you give patients about how to make sure they're getting credible information, the best information online?
Well, I think the point made by the gentleman from the Navy is a great one. And by the way, I was in Norfolk with Admiral Bowman a few months ago, and one thing I should say about the military healthcare system is they do a great job streamlining information so it's accessible to a lot of people who are generally healthy. But when you look for health sites that are going to be reliable, one is to check the ending. It is often of value if it's an educational site, so it's EDU or organizational site, ORG, rather than a .com. Secondly, past that more simple screening, are they trying to sell you something or are they trying to educate you?
Mm-hmm.
If they're trying to sell you something, then they're understandably, and not out of malice, they're understandably going to show you this part of information. They're going to focus on the aspect of the problem that most suits the thing that they're trying to sell. And finally, who are the main players involved with the site? Is it the American Heart Association, which is a fairly reputable organization, or is it a small clinic that is trying to popularize, you know, well-meaning clinicians, but aren't going to spend a ton of time trying to provide high-quality educational material, which is quite expensive to do.
Yeah.
And these quick screening techniques will help filter down. You know, I just in preparation for the show, I went online. There are 106 million websites that deal with health.
You know, in preparation for the show, I went and searched something and found, you know, found just thousands and thousands of websites.
So but in fact, that's why I think the internet is even more useful after you've seen a physician. But that's a big burden for the medical profession to take on.
Yeah.
But it is imperative, as this gentleman from the Navy was saying, for us to actually aim our patients towards sites that we trust for their ailments.
Yeah. Let's take one more call before you have to go, Dr. Oz. Tracy in Durham, North Carolina. Hi, Tracy.
Hey. I'm actually a physician, but I also have a relatively newly diagnosed chronic illness. And the thing I found interesting is I did do some surfing just out of curiosity to see what was out there when I was diagnosed. And I found some of the patient testimonials incredibly depressing in the way that I saw worst-case scenarios. And I knew that my disease wasn't a worst-case scenario. I think in some cases it can actually be harmful for patients when they're first diagnosed because they see all the terrible things that can happen to them, that they anticipate the worst and they don't necessarily have to.
See, that's the danger of the web in a number of cases. I think sometimes, you know, you can get really extreme information.
I think it's a great, great point. In fact, the biggest challenge that I think we have as a society is that many people are afraid of their health. They have very scary views of what's going on inside that ectoderm that they think they live in. And yet, awareness of your body, you know, being comfortable with this precious resource you're given is a tremendous asset, and the internet can help teach you about it. But I think the physician's point is a great one. Unfortunately, many of us are scared by those realities. That was the whole point that I made. I mean, the key goal here is to show that you can be the world expert on your body, but that's a big mantle of responsibility to absorb.
Okay, thanks so much for your call, Tracy. Thanks so much for your call. Let's go to another call now. Kathy in Buffalo, New York. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I have a bit of a different perspective and also caution to loved ones and friends who use the Internet. I was diagnosed with a bone marrow disorder last summer, and it should be mentioned that my husband is a physician. And I was immediately hooked up with a hematologist. I was comfortable with how everything was going, and family and friends were using the internet to, out of the kindness of their hearts, probably to help me, but were giving me false information. Within my bone marrow disorder, there's many, many different types, and the word anemia is in my diagnosis, so immediately I was recommended that I needed more iron in my diet, whereas my doctor had explain to me, if anything, I cannot overload on iron. So I guess my concern is sometimes people going on the internet, they would never normally get in their car and go to a library and look up these diseases, and they become instant doctors. And they were even trying to trump my own husband, who was, of course, looking out for my well-being, and my doctor. And again, I realized that they did it out of love and concern for me, but it was very painful, and it made it it made it so that I had to become a little defensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's gotten to the point now where we just tell people my platelets are low, and that's all we say. We don't even say the name of my diagnosis. It's a disease that most people have never even heard of, and once they try to educate themselves on it, they think they've become doctors.
Thank you for your call, Kathy. I'm going to ask Dr. Oz to respond to the point that you were making before he has to leave. Dr. Oz?
You know, the word doctor comes from a Latin term, doctorate. Or it means teacher. The responsibility of the health profession is to try to educate patients and provide guidance for these exact challenges. Teaching yourself medicine on the Internet is quite challenging. On the other hand, I think there's a huge middle ground. We've heard two cases now that are probably one extreme, and then we have many individuals from the other extreme who are absolutely repulsed by the thought of being responsible for their own well-being. What the Internet provides you is a tool. Tools are good or bad depending on how you use them. So an intelligent user of the Internet, I think, benefits tremendously. And an intelligent relationship with your doctor and the Internet is probably the best health care you can get in the world today.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Oz.
Thank you.
Dr. Mehmet Oz is vice chair of surgery at the New York Presbyterian Hospital and a professor of surgery at Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. He joined us by phone from his office in New York. Joining us now is Dr. Eric Lederman. He's the medical director of clinical information systems at the University of California Davis Health System. He joins us by phone from his office in Sacramento, California. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Lederman.
My pleasure.
Can you explain to us how your organization has used online tools to build relationships between doctors and patients?
Sure. We actually started about a year and a half ago with a small pilot, which was very successful. And we've now got a system in place for all the patients with all the doctors and their staff in our community primary care network in the four counties in and around Sacramento. And we've actually got a separate pilot going on in our academic obstetrics and gynecology department here, which involves faculty and residents and all sorts of other folks. We're using a web messaging system, and that's kind of like it's not email. It's like what people do when they shop online, go through a web browser.
Mm-hmm.
You have to log in as yourself. Everybody's got their own login. Everything's encrypted, as it is for banking transactions. And there are a lot of tools available that aren't available with email. And we've got more than 7,000 patients using this now, and the rate of growth is pretty rapid. So
how does your system address liability concerns?
Do you mean the
for doctors
who practice liability concerns?
Yeah.
Yeah, when we were setting this up, we involved our legal counsel here at the medical center and our risk management folks, because we're self-insured as part of the University of California. And they were wildly enthusiastic about using such a system because, from what they tell me, the main problem with defending doctors' malpractice suits is that there's either poor documentation or it's illegible or it's just not there at all. And with this system, you've got every single word. And all the words that come in from the patients are their own words. There's no translation by a front office person putting pen to paper, for instance. And it's all legible, and it's all permanently archived forever. So they think it's great.
And what about patient privacy? How is that respected in this system?
Well, as I mentioned, the access to the system requires a unique user ID and password by every single person. And we keep track of every single thing that anybody looks at or does as required by federal law. It's HIPAA. A lot of your listeners may be familiar with that term, HIPAA. Everybody has to come in. Everything's encrypted, as I mentioned, and we keep track of what everybody does. So as far as we can determine, we're fully compliant with both federal and California state laws.
All right. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Lederman.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Dr. Eric Lederman is the medical director of clinical information systems at the University of California Davis Health System, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And now joining us is Vicki Rideout, Vice President and Director of the Kaiser Family Foundation's Program for the Study of Entertainment, Media, and Health. She's the primary author of the group's report, GenerationRx.com, How Young People Use the Internet for Health Information. Thanks for being with us, Vicki.
My pleasure.
How are you defining young people for the purpose of your research, and how many young people do use the Internet as a health resource?
Well, we focused on teenagers and young adults. So we looked at young people ages 15 to 24. And we found that an extraordinary number of them are using the Internet to look up health information. 3 out of 4 online kids have looked up some health topic online. That's as many as have downloaded music. And I think that it's, when you think about it, it's maybe not surprising because so many of the health issues that people in this age group face are things that are embarrassing for them to talk about with others, whether it's birth control or sexually transmitted diseases, eating disorders, drug and alcohol issues, and so on. So confidentiality is of the utmost importance to them.
And what's the demographic breakdown of young people who use the Internet this way?
Well, like I say, it's so widespread that, you know, 3 out of 4 people in this age group who are online have at some point or another looked up a health topic online. But I think that it's the case with all issues of health information seeking. Girls are more likely than boys to do it. If you look at sexual health topics, for example, if you just look at the 15 to 17-year-old girls, half of them have gone online to look up some topic like birth control or STDs or pregnancy or something, compared to about a third of boys. So they're all doing it, but girls more so than boys.
All right, we're going to continue this discussion after a short break, and Vicki Rideout will be with us. Next week at this hour, we'll explore how doctors and patients communicate one-on-one. Has bedside manner evolved? How is it different than it was 20 or 30 years ago? That's next week in the second part of our series. And tomorrow, NPR's All Things Considered will examine the importance of doctor-patient communication with a visit to New York City's Bellevue Hospital. They'll follow Dr. Daniel Ofri as she makes her rounds, a process that requires her to listen carefully and at length to not only what the medical charts say, but what her patients are holding back.
Often it's the at-the-doorknob diagnosis. The patient is walking out the door, their hand on the doorknob, and will say, by the way, and that's when the real stuff comes out. I had one patient who had all kinds of pains in strange places, none of which made sense physiologically, and every test was normal. People kept saying, it's all in your head, it's all in your head. And as she was leaving, hand on the doorknob, she said, do you think it might be because all the spots I have pain is where my boyfriend shot me with a dart gun?
That's tomorrow on All Things Considered. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about how the Internet is changing doctor-patient communication. My guest is Vicki Rideout, director of the Kaiser Family Foundation's Study of Entertainment, Media, and Health. And we're going to take a call now from Nancy in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Go ahead.
This is really kind of a follow-up to a number of phone calls and the previous caller. My story really is about my father-in-law being diagnosed with something called constant pressure hydrocephalus. And basically, it ends up you need a shunt to drain the pressure off the brain. And when my mother-in-law and father-in-law came to visit before, they told us, they got out of the car, and my mother-in-law dragged me aside and said, through clenched teeth, we're going to tell you something, and I don't want you to go to the Internet and tell me anything about it. I'm trained as a librarian, and I was going to go to the Internet, but I wasn't going to tell her about it. And I thought it was really interesting about how different our responses were. Mine is immediately to go find out more about it, and hers was, I don't want to know another thing. She was trained as a nurse, and basically if a doctor told you to do something, she did it. And mine is, you know, as a research person, as a librarian, go find out more about it.
Well, and I think it speaks not only to that difference, but also to just generational differences.
Well, that's what I was going to say, yeah. It's a really, I mean, basically that generation just tell me what to do and, you know, and we'll follow along. And that really kind of scared us. They live 4 hours away.
Right.
And I really wanted to be more involved in helping them figure out what to do. The second thing I was going to say is then when we did go to the Internet, the site we found, and it was a wonderful site, it actually had a video that showed the gait that was associated with this, and it mimicked, I mean, it showed my father-in-law's walk, and, I mean, it was like, oh, my gosh, couldn't believe it. But what I realized, and I'm trained to look at sites, it was a commercial site. It ends .com, and I didn't realize that until we were way into the site, and then even trying to find out who owned the site was very difficult.
Yeah.
And I use the site now to tell people about being careful about being a consumer of Internet stuff, not just medical information, but how easily you can be drawn into a site. And they weren't being bad. I mean,
right.
The stuff they were providing was good, but they were also selling a particular kind of shunt.
Well, thanks so much, Nancy. Thank you for your call. I wanted to get Vicki to respond because I think Nancy's call brings up a couple of different things, particularly getting back to the question of teenagers, which is that this whole idea of the generational difference, not only in attitudes towards health professionals, especially doctors, but in the use of the Internet and the use of technology.
Right. I mean, the Internet is the first place young people think of. I mean, it's part of their mindset when they want information on anything, whether it's for a school project or whatever, the first place they think to go is the Internet. So that certainly is the case when it comes to health issues, whether it's something that happened to a family member or something that they themselves are facing. And I think the issue that the caller was talking about this kind of blend between a promotional site and an informational site where it's hard to distinguish exactly what this site is something that's really important for all users. Young users, I think, in particular, need to develop that kind of informational literacy, I guess you could call it, where you're able to discern what's behind this information and, you know, is there some other purpose, like is somebody trying to market a drug or a product to me? And I think, you know, a lot of young people aren't checking what the source is of the information that they're looking at. And so we just need to work on those kinds of skills.
They can be a little naive, you're saying, in terms of what they're seeing on the web being the absolute truth?
Well, you know, it's not that they have a blind trust in it. I mean, it's a relatively low percentage of young people who will say they trust health information on the Internet a lot, and certainly they rely a lot more on traditional sources like doctors. But it's developing the skills to know you need to go look at the source of this information and how can you tell what the source of it is. And maybe it would be a good idea to check a bunch of different sources or to try a different search engine or try different search terms. So it's those kinds of habits that people need to get into when they're looking for health information on the Internet.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us, Vicki.
Sure thing.
Vicki Rideout directs the study of entertainment, media, and health at the Kaiser Family Foundation.